What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Thursday. Ready to chat some MMA with you all on today's show. We're going to talk about last night's result on one on TNT 2. That's right, the second edition on this crazy April that one championship is established on TNT. Well, crazy in the sense of I think that's just huge and tremendous. And they had another fun show last night. So we'll go over those results. This week we got Bellator again on Friday, Showtime. UFC, this time on big ESPN. We'll cover that. We'll update you on Dustin Poirier versus Conor McGregor. Their fight set for July. Fans were allowed. That's great. The T-Mobile Arena is going to open the doors, and hopefully it'll be just like it was in the old days. I'm sure some people rock the mask, some won't. I don't know. But fans are back, and that's great in the Silver State. So we'll talk about that. But also what I want to update you on is some comments from Poirier in regards to his part to that exchange they had on social media regarding the Good Fight Foundation and why the money from the McGregor team hasn't gotten there or whatever. So we'll update you on that. We'll see if we can dip our toe into Rose Namajunas' comments as well. Better dead than red. Kind of read up about it a little bit. I've heard her now do a second interview. So we're not in her mind. It's hard to really opine without living through it the way her family did. So that I can respect. But was it even necessary? I don't know. She was asked about it, and I thought that was pretty brave of her to tackle a controversial subject. So we'll talk about that as well. Buckle up, Junkie Nation. It's going to be a fun show here on a Thursday, April 15th, back in 10 seconds. All right, go. So last night, Christian Lee defeated Tim Nestukian. I've been calling him Tim Nasty because I still think I'm butchering his name. Quick work by young Christian Lee, 22 years old, gets another title defense under his belt. He remains the lightweight champion. Little bit of controversy, mostly because Tim Nasty kind of got up quickly after the ref stopped it, as if to say, like, what's the deal here? You know, like, I'm still in the fight. But he had also taken at least a dozen unanswered blows. And there's the whole you must intelligently defend yourself portion of the rule set, which I think that's why the fight was stopped. Because on a few different occasions, you know, after that beautiful, well-timed left hook, Christian Lee basically, I should say Tim Nasty had his back towards Christian Lee, kind of like in an all-fours position. And every time he looked like he was kind of posting up and ready to maybe turn for a single or just get up, spring up, whatever, he got clipped in the chin, and his body would then yet again kind of like listfully fall more towards the canvas, which, again, I'm trying to relay to you all what I saw and what I think the ref is seeing. The ref is seeing, like, okay, I think this kid's going to get out of it. And then, boom, another blow, and he'd fall. But he wouldn't completely, like, just fall face first and go limp because he was still in it. And then a couple more shots and probably some communication from the ref, and that was it. He interjected. Now, 14 shots. I think it was 14, they said, unanswered blows. It's kind of a lot, you know, especially if you have not really done anything, you know, to move, maybe hit back some, you know, maybe a backhand or even that thumbs up to the ref. I don't know. I think you just got to give the ref information that tells you I'm still in the fight. Now, remember, sometimes you can actually kind of go from like a unconscious state, or you're about to go into an unconscious state, to all of a sudden you're kind of like snapped back into it. You know, you shake it off, you shake off the cobwebs. And I think that's what Tim Nasty was doing. And what it looked like to me was, had the ref kind of stopped it more on one of those blows where he kind of went a little bit more limp, rather than when he was kind of regaining that Hulk Hogan strength, I think we would have been able to stomach it well. Like, I'm okay with it, honestly. I really am. But I'm trying to see Tim Nasty's side to it. So I watched the replay many times. And I agree, man. As soon as it was stopped, he kind of looked at the ref like, what are you doing? Anyway, What did you think of it? How did you see all this?
I'm going to be honest with you. The way it went down on fight night, when I was watching it, without seeing what happened after the referee stopped it, I was screaming, stop the fight, because this is a Christian Lee that was cocking back as far as he could, the most power he could possibly get, and he must have thrown like 10 of those. And all I could see were some were hitting him here, some were hitting him in the head. But that looked like a recipe for just absolute disaster. And it just kept coming. It kept coming. Tim Nasty didn't really show anything. Like, I'm about to get out of this. Just watch. Like, it just looked like he was taking punishment. And so at that particular moment, I was thinking not only stop it, I was thinking stop it before something really bad happens. Then when they stopped it, you're right. There are times where fighters can kind of come in and out of consciousness. It just didn't look as bad when the stoppage was made and he's kind of moving around somewhat okay. But everything leading up to that was pretty damn nasty. So I can't blame the referee at all. I guess kudos to Tim Nasty for the type of chin he has. But even then, like, there's a difference between being able to stand there and go, hey, what's going on, and fighting back.
Right.
So I don't know.
You even add some damage. Like, it looked like a hematoma, like in a different shape than what we're used to seeing. So he was getting rocked for sure. And if the ref had said, all right, then keep fighting, that still would have been a jacked up Tim Nasty versus Christian Lee, who was just after him from the get-go, we can say. I think Tim Nasty's problem was he had a two-hand post. And maybe if he had had one and remember, they have different grounded opponent rules. But at least to maybe deflect or show some sort of a defense, then I think the ref can't say you're not intelligently defending yourself, because I think that would be a pretty decent defense if you can kind of get your hand up. And if we go back a week, Yuri Lapikus kind of did the same thing to Eddie Alvarez, where he kind of turned his head, not because I think he wanted to reveal the back of his head. I think he was just trying to hide his chin, but then he had one of his hands up to really protect, you know, that part that can knock you out. Remember, up here, you can get knocked out, but it's usually more of the equilibrium side. Again, I've seen both, where somebody gets hit up here and they go out. But up here, more on the side of the head and the back of the head right here, the legal shots, is more about your balance being off. And the ones where you see someone just completely go down is, you know, when you get hit right along the chin, around the jaw in certain spots. So I thought Lapikus was doing a pretty decent job. And I'm looking at Eddie Alvarez. I mean, we've covered this, but they were showing highlights last night. And Eddie Alvarez was looking to see where he wanted to go. It's just, unfortunately, it wasn't connecting, you know. And that's no different than, I guess, if, you know, you had an axe and minus Leonardo DiCaprio on Titanic when he just had the perfect shot. But you know, you draw an X of where you want to hit it. Well, you don't always hit it right on the X. Sometimes you're just off a bit, you know, you're trying, but you're not always accurate. So I think, you know, that was last week anyway. But this week, I could understand Tim Nasty, but under the rules, he was done. He was done and he didn't have a proper defense. And I really liked the ref. I think he was assertive, and I think he falls under that perfect guideline of it certainly wasn't too early and it certainly wasn't too late, and it's all how you digest MMA, you know, whether you want earlier stoppages to preserve these athletes or later because the athletes have done so much they deserve the last chance. It was well within the, you know, those boundaries. So I want to definitely give praise to the referee. I guess what sucks is there's just a lot of controversy for one championship on TNT. Controversy and fights that may not have gone their way as they try and write the script for how they would like to make, you know, their proper comeback here post-pandemic.
Last week, I agree. This week, I think it's just part of the game. It really is. And he just wasn't doing anything, you know, regardless of how bad we thought it was. He wasn't doing anything that was showing that he was still in this fight, except for just turning his back. I mean, he was getting lit up, dude. That guy was torqued all the way back with every shot. He was screaming as he was throwing them. It could have been pretty, pretty nasty. So to me, I think the only controversy is really coming out of Tim Nasty. I think anybody else that watches that fight would say, dude, the guy just wasn't doing anything. He was getting lit up, and it was only going to get worse. So I thought it was a good call. But Christian Lee, man, like Michael Schiavello said, I don't know that you can doubt that kid anymore. Like, I'm not saying he's top five in the world, but he is nasty, dude. That guy's tough, and he's very smart. He's got a good fight IQ.
Yeah, I really like him as well. I've become a big fan after talking to him a few times and then just watching him now perform. He's the real deal for sure. In the co-main event, Jan Todd defeated Ann Lyon Hogstad via a body kick. Did you happen to catch the co-main event, Ghost?
So that fight, okay, they threw. The problem was they had really good defense. They blocked a lot of each other's shots. So I don't want to say it wasn't a boring fight because they were throwing, but they were blocking so much of them strikes. So they kind of got lucky in the end that it ended the way it did. But man, did you hear the noise she made when she got hit in that liver? She just kind of went, oh, and just fell over, bent right over. And you could tell when she stood back up, even if the ref did let it go, she was probably going to get lit up after that. I mean, that was a vicious liver kick.
Some can shake it off in what seems to be like a second and a half or two, where they kind of crumble and they make that face and then they're back. And then others can actually go down from it and just not get up. But yeah, that looked like a really solid kick. I was really, really enjoying the fight. But congratulations to Janet Todd for winning the co-main event. Here are the results of the rest of the card. Yoshiki Nakahara defeated S. Zolstegs. Shu Wang defeated Q Sung Kim, and Shuya Kamikubu defeated Michael Shamale. The undercard was on BR Live, and when they do have time, they do show some of these additional fights on one on TNT. They're back. Well, I should say on TNT. They're back for one on TNT 3 next Wednesday. John Lineker is headlining that bout, the former UFC flyweight and bantamweight. So I am looking forward to that matchup. Moving on, because I want to get to a couple different topics. Rose Namajunas has done some interviews. First with a Lithuanian radio show that started all this, and then back with ESPN. Kind of replaying, I guess, a little bit of her remarks and expanding on them a little bit. But basically, there was a comment that's been being passed around where she mentioned she'd rather be dead than red. She says it stems from her family's struggles in Lithuania, which was part of the old Soviet Union. She also points to a documentary that inspired her, and it had to do with the other Dream Team. It was called The Struggle of the 1992 Lithuania Men's National Basketball Team and what they endured under the Soviet rule. So now where it gets confusing is, that stance alone, I could understand, because that could be just something where she says along the lines of, I'm happy to be in a country that doesn't hold us back from expressing ourselves just as human beings in general, but her as a professional athlete and the success that she can have and enjoy be all for her and her family. You know, a lot of times from what we used to read about the old days of the Soviet Union, you got like a stipend or a salary and that was it. You know, like anything else that came from it wasn't going to be for you, and you weren't going to be able to join like the NBA, for example, if you had those skills. I think Drazen Petrovic was his name, was one of the first that started to come over, but if you had those kind of skills, you just couldn't. You had to play for the national team. I remember they had this big tall center, Arvydas Sabonis, who only played towards the latter end of his career with the Portland Trailblazers. But I would see him line up with, CCCP for the jumpsuits, and then USSR. I would see them play the U.S. from time to time, or just maybe another team. But they had a lot of NBA caliber teams, but they were not allowed to do that. Same thing with a lot of Cuban boxers. Teofilo Stevenson was a great boxer who I think could have matched up well against Ken Norton and Muhammad Ali and Larry Holmes and all those guys. He won 4 gold medals, for crying out loud, if I'm not mistaken. That's all he was able to do, was just fight in the Olympics or whatever. And then you would hear about these athletes that would defect, you know? So anyway, not to get too off topic, but under that rule, and after she explained what happened with her family and her grandfather, that's where it came where with I'd rather be dead than red. So red is, you know, affiliated with communism. Now, where it gets confusing is, all right, that seems to be part of your family history, but why is it applying to this fight versus a young lady who actually had really nice things to say about you, wants to be your friend afterwards, never really flown that flag other than this is where I'm from, you know, this is what the UFC does, they'll put a flag of your country, but never really get too political about it, you know? And So I think that's where the blur is. Like, so are you also not feeling China? Does this apply to all communist countries? You know, do you have a real big problem with it still? I don't know. I've yet to really get that clarification. She says she wants to be friends with Weili. She even said she loves Weili, you know, and she does hope to be friends, but she still sees that as part of, I guess, red communist China. I don't know if I want to use the word hatred, but just what she feels towards it, where she would rather be dead than be anything associated with that. And that's kind of that's a pretty stiff jab towards an opponent who, if they're living their life and doing well, you know, many people are very patriotic. They would take great offense to that.
Yeah, I've thought about it quite a bit, and I guess it's tough because everybody has their own personal beliefs, but to me it just seems like a comment that's somewhat out of place at the moment. And I guess if I had to break it down, the first question I would have is, because we live here in America, but as you can see in the politics in the United States, not everybody's always in tune with what the president of the United States wants to do or who they are. So I fly the American flag, but sometimes I don't agree with certain policies that happen in our country. So I don't know that just because Zhang Weili is Chinese that she's just all about communism, right? She may have her own personal beliefs. So I don't know that something like that would apply to the fight. So I just feel like maybe she might have spoken out of turn a little bit. And then, you know, once you're pressured into responses and all that, I think it's just hard for people to go, you know what, maybe I shouldn't have said that or something. I don't know. I'm not saying she's wrong for anything she's saying. I'm just saying I think it may have been out of place.
You know, and the more and more I learn about China, the more I'm in a way fascinated. For starters, I have family and friends. And right away, I can tell you, my Uncle Guido, he's been to China and loved it. Our colleague, Dan Tom, been to China, loved it. Steve Strong's been to China as well, the late Steve Strong. If you told me we're going to China, I would be actually excited to go. But unfortunately, I think there's this dark cloud, you know, with the word politics on it that seems to be really, really casting a shadow on the worst of countries rather than the best of countries. And that's a damn shame. I just think that Rose could have still drawn inspiration off that documentary and her family's past, but maybe not associated it with China because that wasn't under the USSR rule. And I still would like to know how many Chinese actually live a happy life and, you know, don't mind living in China. I don't know that I've heard too many complaints, you know, from people that have worked in China, lived in China, you know, NBA players, things like that, where they come back and say, well, lucky to not live there. Now, the opposite would be for like North Korea, for example, or Cuba. You know, I've gotten lots of feedback from people that have lived there or family members and how things were there. But from China, I haven't really heard that. But it was very, very confusing. And when she had a chance to clear it up, she actually doubled down and said, no, yeah, that's kind of what I meant. So we'll see. I'm glad she finished with love towards Zhang Weili. and saying she wants to be friends with her. Maybe they can sit down with translators and hammer out what they really meant. But I just thought that's very unusual chatter entering a big fight between two fighters. I've never really heard stuff like that before.
Dude, a happy Zhang Weili is scary. Can you imagine what a pissed off one would look like? She better say some nice things about her.
Yeah, well, that said goes, I'm taking Rose.
You are?
Yeah.
I understand why you're doing that. Rose has this type of style that can bother a lot of people. And what I like about her is she doesn't wait for everyone else to do their thing. She implements her game plan from the second that fight starts. And if it works, it works, which a lot of the times it does. And if it doesn't, she goes down with the ship. But Zhang Weili.
And Zhang Weili's been rocked, and Rose has finishing power in her hands, competent jiu-jitsu if the fight gets taken to the ground. So it's not that Zhang Weili doesn't have great striking and awesome power herself, but I don't know. I'm riding with Rose on this.
She's a rock, man. Zhang Weili is a rock. And she's still getting better. That's the thing. So I haven't made up my mind who I'm going to take, but there are very few people that I wouldn't take Rose Namajunas in a fight that she's fighting. But this Zhang Weili is just something else, man. I don't know. That and the Askren-Paul fight, man, I could probably give you a breakdown on both of them and why they should win, but I've flip-flopped probably about four times on each one. I don't know what the hell's going on.
Okay. Let's move to McGregor and Poirier. So just a quick catch up. McGregor had been, you know, I wouldn't say running his mouth, but just talking about what he plans to do in July when he fights Poirier again. When he fights Poirier again and somewhere along the lines, I want him to meet me in the middle. You know, he's hyping up the fight, how Conor does. And I didn't think anything was out of line. It's tough to do that, too, because you're the one coming off a loss. But you're the one also saying, this is what's going to happen. This is what's going to do. And the other guy is the one going, well, were you not there 2.5 months ago when I stopped you? So, but regardless, McGregor is still good at compartmentalizing it, phrasing it the right way. And he also has a win in his back pocket. So it's 1-1 going into the third one. But in one of those little posts, Poirier comes back and says, because Conor used the word, I think, predict. I predict that this is what's going to happen. And then Poirier flipped that and did a play on words and said, you also predicted you were going to donate to the Good Fight Foundation in January. Haven't heard from you. Team tried to reach out to you guys. No reply, blah, blah, blah. And McGregor fires back, well, this is a donation, not a debt. We tried to find out exactly where the money was going to be used. That's what my foundation does. That's what my team does. And we didn't get a reply. Poirier says, again, well, we've tried to reach you and make contact. This could have been discussed then. And then you could see McGregor, he was embarrassed. He was embarrassed. And he mentioned the word smearing my reputation or smearing my name or something like that. And so he even threatened to pull the fight, you know, and Dustin, have fun with your regular contract. Anyway, since then, Dustin says, that's my bad for taking it public. Something along the lines of that. And, you know, he did a statement. I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have taken things public. He goes, I will learn from that. I'll own it. I shouldn't have done it. And see you in July. What do you think goes of, you know, him owning up to that mistake and making the donation details public?
I really don't know. Because he had plenty of time to realize that what he was doing was probably not the smartest of things. I think it's one of those things where you just ask for forgiveness once you do it, but you do it because you know it had to be done. I think he just felt like, you know what, I'm going to do this. And I'll probably get some people that are going to be pissed off at me. And when they do, I'll put a nice little statement out there and apologize, because I'm that guy that a lot of people do think is sincere and will believe. And I'll just do that. But I kind of want to stick it to this guy right now. I understand that. I've been that guy before in life. So I don't know that I believe that he sat there and said, you know what, I made a mistake. I think he wanted to put that out there to sting him. Because it does suck that Connor has not done that yet. And this probably did get the ball rolling in that direction. But I wanted to ask you something, George. I wanted to ask Crazy Millionaire George. Mm-hmm. I was thinking the other day, Floyd Mayweather is one of Conor McGregor's biggest rivals, right? In the sense that, you know, they talked a lot of smack for a while. They got in there. He mopped the floor with them. But at the same time, like money-wise, right? If you were Floyd and you had all that money, wouldn't you just throw that extra zinger in there and go, you know what, Dustin, don't worry. I got this and an extra 500 from my son over here causing trouble. And just to fuck with him, like, wouldn't you do that if you had that much money?
If I had, I can't just be a millionaire because then the whole
– No, that's all of it.
But, yeah, if I'm a multimillionaire, I would – and you brought that – I don't know if I would think that myself because I'm no longer – I don't know. I just don't know. I'd have to be put in that spot. But you bringing it to me, I would give it some serious thought, especially if a McGregor-Mayweather fight is in the works or it's a strong possibility. If it's not, then I'm not sure I'm going to do it just for that. But then again, if a lot of my wealth I allocate towards charity, that's a good spot to do it and also still take a jab at someone else. Because I think these guys like taking jabs at each other like that in a way. So, yeah, I would give strong consideration to that.
Because that's not where the embarrassment comes from. The embarrassment for Conor McGregor, it's not what he thinks of when he goes to the post office, what the people in line think of him, or the fans out in the arena think of him. It's what people of his status think of him. That's why he was pissed off, right? It's embarrassing to go to a party with Hollywood's elite and hear something like that. It ain't going to be good. So I think if I'm Floyd, I mean, isn't a lot of that tax deductible, the stuff that you give to the charity? I would probably throw that zinger just to mess with the guy.
Yeah. Me too. Or maybe Habib. I don't know.
Oh, God.
It's going towards a good cause. And again, the McGregor should understand this. The same way he said my name was smeared, you kind of smeared Good Fight Foundation's name. Because I've never read anything that says they're highly controversial and the way their money's been dispersed in the past or anything like that. Seems like every time Poirier has said this is what we're going to do, he posts pictures and updates and this is what we did. And I think that's tremendous. You know, when you're at the point of – I don't want to repeat too much of what I said on Monday's show. But when you're at the point where you're basically exchanging wiring – information, you know, banking information, I think by then you would have vetted the other place. In fact, you probably would have vetted them before deciding you want to give them 500 grand. You made this big announcement that says, I am going to give 500 grand to this charity. Well, that's great. You know, very honorable. We all applaud you. But now waiting for extra info to make sure, you know, all your money's going to a certain spot. I don't know. I think that in a way it indirectly smears the foundation, you know, or maybe even Poirier's name. So in an effort to express his displeasure for his name getting smeared, he kind of did it to others. And again, that's why I say it's got to be when you get to that level, if that really, really is what affects your world, then hire a professional that can, you know, cover all those bases before you get in there and do it, especially if you're a little rough around the edges. And Connor and a lot of fighters are, a lot of us are, you know, we – especially if you don't have a full education and you've never been taught those ways. He can rag on Poirier being new money, but he's not far behind. I think 2013 or something like that, he was still – things were still rough for Conor McGregor. That wasn't that long ago. That was 8 years ago. So you didn't grow up – you're not like Paris Hilton growing up in wealth. You know what I mean? We're all learning when we get new wealth, how to conduct ourselves and how to – you know, eat at the big boys table, I suppose. Who knows? I don't know. It's just relax, you know, and hopefully he makes good on the 500 G's, sends it, and that's that. The past is always forgiven by time, and you just move on. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I feel you.
And I did see Adiatar's answer to somebody who asked, hey, all you're waiting for are details. Once you get them, you will pay. And Adi told him, yes, that's all we're waiting on. He wrote yes and yes, meaning – yes, we're only waiting on details, and yes, the money will be sent. So that was good news. Poirier seemed to think, hey, we're good, you know, no worries, we'll move on. We got the big announcements coming up. But and I guess maybe that was okay for him to say, but I don't know. I would still hope that the other guy comes through if I'm Poirier.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Hey, what'd you think of Jan Blachowicz versus Glover Teixeira in September? That was a nice announcement. It gives Blachowicz that he wanted like 6 months to kind of be with family, new baby, and just not jump into a camp. Because his camps are probably, what, 2-3 months, I imagine. He wanted like some good, I want to get fat time, enjoy my family time, you know, not that 1 week or 1 month turnaround. It seemed like he wanted a good 3 months of relaxation and then another 2 to 3 months of preparation. And he got it. September is a good ways away.
Yeah, I mean, it's the matchup that should happen. That's what I like about it. Glover has already kind of been in that situation. Well, I mean, he's fought for the title before, but he was actually an alternate too in the last one. So I'm happy that the fight's being made. It's a good fight. It's not on the magnitude of some of these other fights where you feel like, man, I can't miss that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But it'll be a good fight, and it's what needs to happen. So I'm glad that it is.
Would you say that's just because those two guys are a little bit more vanilla, like less street swag, or they're just good guys? Why aren't you as excited? Because Blachowicz has kind of been on a killer trail, man.
Yeah, maybe it's a little bit of that. You know, like when people think of mixed martial arts and they think of the UFC, they think of guys walking through the door that look like Francis Ngannou, right? Mm-hmm. I think I could walk into a bar and go, hey, my uncle's decided to join us. Is it cool? And people would go, yeah, sit down, fellas. You know, like they just maybe don't have that look. But when you break down the fight the way it should play out, it's probably going to be a pretty damn good fight. But the thing that kind of overshadows everything is the fact that you have John Jones out there. And you know, like, I think it's tough for people to go, hey, these are the two best light heavyweights in the world, to give them that title when we know who the best light heavyweight in the world is. He's just not there, you know? It's kind of a weird feeling.
You just made me think of something. I want to...
walk into a bar with our uncles?
No. I want to write... I'm just looking at John Jones's Twitter. Because, well, for one, I just want to say this. This is a fun fact. 38-year-old Jan Blachowicz will defend against 41-year-old Glover Teixeira. And I'm wondering if the combined age of 79 is the oldest that a championship fight has had. Now, you probably would have to think of Randy Couture and fill in the blank, because Randy used to be into his 40s when he was fighting for titles.
Maybe Mike Van Arsdale, I think, was a little bit up there in age when he fought him.
Yeah. But Mike Bond would probably know that. And if I get a chance, I'll send him a quick message here. But I want to go on John Jones's Twitter as I kind of move on to another subject. Because you mentioned Francis Ngannou in that interview he had with Mike Tyson. Have you seen everything coming out of Tyson Fury and Francis Ngannou? And
yeah.
One question. Then the other question is, could this be upsetting John Bones Jones, because he's not getting talked about? Like legit actual heavyweight guys with straps, with a legend and Mike Tyson steering the ship, they're talking about, you know, baddest man on the planet, and Derek Lewis's name still gets getting thrown in there. But I haven't heard John Jones's name in the last week or so.
Bro, this doesn't even really have to – this isn't an attack on John Jones, like, oh, because he's got a huge ego or anything like that. I think any human in that situation would probably go, what the fuck? Like, now this guy's getting in the mix. Like, enough already. You know who I am? Like, he's probably seething. He has to be seething that those remarks are even out there, that those options are even being talked about by fans. I doubt it'll ever happen. I asked this question on Twitter. Like, I guess if you were ever to have that type of fight between a high-level boxer and a high-level MMA guy, I think you'd probably want it at heavyweight. But it just wouldn't happen. And I'll be honest with you. I think Tyson Fury would mop the floor with him in boxing. That's just how it is. But But yeah, John Jones has to be seething. And I don't really even think it has to do with his ego. I think it just has to do with he might have just misplayed everything. And it all probably comes down to that one tweet that night, the night of the fight.
Which was what?
Money.
Oh.
I think if he just would have stayed quiet and the fight didn't get made, then I think the pressure's on the UFC. The fans go, wait, what's going on? Why isn't this happening? But that's it.
You might as well be a guy that's complaining for your rightful purse versus a guy complaining for your rightful purse but whining along the way, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
What's so funny?
I'm laughing at the little ghost that walked behind you.
Oh, all right. Yeah. All right. Well, I just looked at his Twitter, and he said, on April 11th, fun fact, John Jones has generated almost $500 million in pay-per-view revenue for the UFC. So he's still keeping it up. They still haven't decided on anything other than Francis Ngannou versus John Jones. I suppose it could be Derek Lewis, who's already said he'll take that $8 million purse if they're offering it. John Jones says that's not enough. But, I was just thinking about that. And Fury and Ngannou, I have to believe that the boxers by now know we'll smoke your ass in boxing. You got us in MMA, but where you lose is you'll get smoked in an alley, too, by the MMA guy. You know what I mean?
They need to say that more, though. They need to say it more. I don't know why they don't say it.
The MMA guys?
Yeah, they need to say that more. It's like
they're some of them won't even admit that they'd get taken in boxing. Yeah, I think I could. Like, I'm hearing Eddie Alvarez saying he's in advanced talks or serious talks to box Oscar De La Hoya, who I think's more closer to my age. He's like 49 or something like that. But geez, that's a tall task, man. To, you know, have you ever seen an amateur boxer? Not an amateur boxer, but have you ever seen a club fighter who's like 10-10 spar with someone who's like 19-1 or 20-0 and just a higher level, and they get tuned up? And those club boxers would do very well against MMA guys. Now what Eddie has going for him is age, but I just don't see how Oscar wouldn't have a pretty easy night. Mir and Tarver, I think I was promoting the age difference there. Not that 52 is way worse than 49, but it seems like after 50, every year is really, really, really slows you down. But Mir has that heavyweight. He's got the power of the heavyweights, you know what I mean? And that's just a big difference maker. That's one. And two, I know of Mir getting a lot of rounds with heavyweights in Las Vegas, and also getting proper training from boxing trainers for many years when he was, you know, working with Angelo Reyes. So that's not to say that I know all of what Eddie Alvarez is up to. But
I do want to go back really quick, though.
Eddie Alvarez was a former gold medalist and one of the best boxers ever, too.
For De La Hoya, I hear you on all of it. But I do think Eddie would give him a fun fight. I think he would have little moments here and there. And it's just because a couple things. Obviously, age is a factor. But De La Hoya seemed like the type of guy that when he retired, that was it. Like, he wasn't one of those guys that kind of still sticks around and hits the bag. Like, trust me, them suits that he used to wear fight night are not fitting today. But there are also rumors of things that have happened in Oscar De La Hoya's life, right? That I don't know that his lifestyle has been the cleanest either. You look at a guy like Mike Tyson right now, I think he's like a vegan, and he always seems to be doing something. I don't know that Oscar's really been in gyms. So you add age, you add partying to the mix. I think Eddie, who is a guy who, yeah, he's a mixed martial artist, but he loves boxing.
Gun to the head.
Huh?
Gun to the head. Fight's about to start. Who you got?
Oscar De La Hoya.
Yeah, he's 5'11", man. He's got a reach advantage on him. You're right. He definitely wouldn't be, what he was when he was the golden boy. But, Jesus, he still has skills, man. I don't know. I don't know. I don't like Francis's chances against Tyson in the boxing ring, but I think I'd like his chances more than Eddie's versus just because of that power. Even Conor McGregor landed an uppercut against Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
And an uppercut can definitely turn off Fury's lights off. I mean, I've seen Fury get knocked down. So I don't know. The heavyweight
Undertaker when he got hit.
Huh?
But he was the Undertaker when he got hit. I thought he died when he got hit with that. And then he just kind of sat up like, oh, that was uncomfortable. And,
it was the Undertaker.
I'm laughing at the chat right now because they're talking about, like, what's the least amount of money that you would take a beating for from, say, a pro boxer? Say Oscar De La Hoya. What is the least amount of money you would take to get in there and take that beating?
Me versus Oscar?
Yeah. What do you need?
Well, for sure, no less than $1 million.
That's what they're saying.
But the greedy Latino side of me would probably throw out 10 and see if I could get talked down to 2, I guess. But
I could be talked down to about 600,000, I think. Mm-hmm. But I'm going out guns a-blazing. I'm Clubber Lang. I'm shooting right out of that corner. I'm throwing, and if I get caught, then ha-ha, you got caught. But I don't know that I want to stick around and get beat up for a round and a half.
McNeely versus Mike Tyson?
Pretty much. Why not at that
point? Huh?
Why not? He's going to beat me. Let's just end it quick. Why am I going to stick around and be a punching bag?
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to out-cardio him. I'm not going to out-technique him. So, yeah, I would come in with some. Would you be so dirty enough to go like this? Like, stick out the glove, kind of like, you know, sportsmanship, and then boom.
Yeah, maybe, because that'll mean that he's probably going to want to end it quicker. So yeah.
What if you got hit in the nuts? Would you not be able to continue?
Yeah, I don't know anything to nobody.
That's funny. All right, so we're on Francis' side. I think he could be competitive. He was right. And he's told us so. If you know about Francis, he boxed first in Cameroon before anything, even before he went to Paris. Did he have pro boxing skills, championship skills? He had pro boxing skills, but did he have pro boxing championship skills? Probably not. But he does have that power. He's super young. Seems to lead a healthy lifestyle. So I would like him to – I think he would have – a shot for 2 rounds, but yeah, the longer the fight goes, the worse it's going to get. In MMA, I think he could beat Tyson Fury in 30 seconds on the streets, probably maybe even less than that. And that's what in this whole battle of the baddest man on the planet, that means anything goes, you know, whether there's a bar, two bar stools, or baseball bats, or one of those hardcore matches in the alley. You always think of the trash cans, don't trash cans, whatever. You just can't tell me that there's a meaner guy on the planet right now than Francis Ngannou. Whoever's wearing that UFC belt is it. You know,
yes.
If Lewis can be it, then I'd say it's Lewis. And if Minnikoff beats Lewis, then it's him. And Tui Vasa, whoever, man, that's the guy. Sorry, boxing.
Yesterday, we were laughing our asses off on our Triple G show because we were trying to figure out the whole Askren and Paul thing. And so Richard Hunter, who's our co-host there, had made the point. He goes, look, I have 2 amateur fights. If you put me in against a pro boxer who's won a title, you're not going to say, and by the way, this is an MMA fight. You're not going to say, but Richard has 2 fights. He's going to mop the floor with this guy. So then we started bringing up old boxers that would kind of fit that criteria and match them up against Richard Hunter. Mm-hmm. And we actually convinced ourselves that Richard Hunter might actually have a better shot than we think in a mixed martial arts fight with just kind of like an old-ass boxer. I can't remember who he looked up, but he said when I looked at his picture, I thought I Googled Burt Watson, but it was a former champ. But we were figuring out the lines for it. When you think about it, at the end of the day, can we? I mean, we're kind of going in that way, right? Can we transition to that fight or no?
Yeah. The Askren fight.
Yeah. I don't know what to do here. I'm going to make some points here. Okay. Jake Paul has two wins in boxing, but they're not. One's over an athlete, but not a boxer, and the other one's just another YouTube guy, right? But at the same time, he probably has been training boxing for a good amount of time and probably facing decent level opponents in the gym. I have to imagine that. Ben Askren is not the first guy you think of when you look at a pair of boxing gloves. He's barely one of the first guys you look at when you look at MMA gloves. His striking is just not that great. And he's going to tell you that. However, he's been doing it for a long time. Okay, so you got to pick up some things. He knows what it's like to be completely rocked and try and figure out how to get your wits back, what you got to do. All that isn't foreign to him. The large crowd screaming as this is happening, people telling you you suck, managing your cardio throughout a fight. There is some experience there that's valuable that's outside of maybe just the fundamentals of boxing.
Agreed.
So, but at the same time, he's had hip surgeries. He's older. I don't think he even thought he would be in this position. So God knows what he's been doing for the last year and a half. So I don't know, man. This is a young cat. You know, like, remember, Jake Paul doesn't have to go out there and knock Ben Askren out, right? He's just got to win the fight. And if you're going to do that, well, maybe your advantages are speed, right? Stick and move, just run around. Who cares? Get the W, get out of there. Maybe he could do that. So I don't know, man. I can make cases for both guys. At the end of the day, I think I'm going with Ben Askren just because he is a professional in something, in combat sports. And that's got to mean something. So I think that's my pick. I'll probably have it to you by the end of the show. But I can make arguments for the other cat. When you look at this, George, do you look at it as, come on, you idiots, it's Ben Askren, that's Jake Paul, or do you see anything of value in Jake Paul?
Well, Jake is taller and longer, so you'll give him the reach advantage and the height advantage, and that's important. He probably has developed, even in his shorter time of training in professional combat sports, so I think he's logged less reps, less hours than Ben Askren, because no matter what, I'm sure Ben, at least once a week, hit mitts and tried to learn, you know, proper defense and how to throw a jab, all that stuff. So I just don't know that it was more than once a week or what. And he didn't really apply it much in his fights. So I would give the advantage to Jake Paul there, probably with his techniques and stuff. But you know, like, he has not been able to get in the head of Ben Askren in this fight. So his confidence, to me, he looked terrible when they faced off. He was reaching for jokes and trying to crack. It didn't come off well. Ben just completely punked him. So right away, he's not going to have some sort of a mental edge or anything like that. I think he's running behind in that department. And I think what happens is you start to crumble a lot easier or break when things don't start going your way, you know, through a round or two. And I just think Ben, at least, has that experience to not even worry about what round one or round two may be like. His plan is to break this kid and then put him away when the guy starts to cover up and he just wants out. You know, I think he thinks that there's going to be a moment in that fight where that's going to happen. And to do it, he's just got a high boxing guard, cover up, make sure he doesn't get hit cleanly and let the other guy maybe wear himself out or at least expend a lot of his gas tank. Now, there is something to be said about your gas tank for wrestling, your gas tank for MMA, and your gas tank for boxing. I mean, I really hope he's been doing some road work and building up his calves and, you know, logging those types of rounds. But if he has, I'm telling you, man, I don't like Jake Paul's chances. I'm going MMA all the way on this one.
On both of them, both fights.
Mir, yes, because I like Frank, local Vegas guy. But I definitely don't like his chances against Cunningham like I liked his chance against Roy, against Antonio Tarver. So There was a Roy Tarver at one point, right? Wasn't he a basketball player? I almost said Roy Tarver.
Not that I know of.
Yeah, it's Antonio Tarver. Because 52, man, I'm 51, and I know just even before my knee injury, I just felt like I could still do some stuff playfully with the guys, you know, shoot hoops and things like that. But now, man, even if I were to fully recover, you can just tell what age, you know, the process of aging, what it's like. Kudos to Mike Tyson and how great he looked at 54 recently. But I'm going to ride with Mir on this one because it's just a small parlay between the two. If I lose, I lose. I don't hand over big envelopes. I hand over small envelopes because I don't ever expose myself. I catch big envelopes, not often, but from time to time, all the stars line up. But I'm real careful on what I play, so I'm not going to do anything ridiculous. If I was just to bet one straight, it would be Askren. No offense to Mir or anything like that, but Mir is fighting Steve Cunningham, who actually held, I think it's an IBF cruiserweight title. Jake Paul hasn't held no titles in boxing, you know. So, yeah, that's where I stand.
The chat room's asking if you're thinking of Roy Tarpley.
That's probably who. He played for the
Mavericks.
Yeah, seven-footer. Yeah. I don't know. I started to say Roy Tarver, and I was like, why am I saying that? I know it's Antonio Tarver. But yeah, that's probably who I was thinking about. Roy Tarver.
I'm gonna take Mir only because I know you'll throw me under the bus if I don't.
Who?
And that fool walks around with knives and guns.
Oh, Mir. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's a tough fight for him, I think.
Very tough. Cunningham last fought in 2017. I think it was to Antonio Tarver, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, I just think, you know, he's bigger too. Switch of stance too from Tarver to Cunningham, and you could tell Mir. I think we asked him that question. And he was like, "Yep, that's the first thing I was thinking about." But you know, like I say, he got quite a few rounds in with Bermain Stiverne. And others, you know, in the boxing world of Vegas. And I think he can look back and be thankful to those rounds and a lot of the techniques he learned from Angelo Reyes. At some point, that boxing became too much extended into his MMA career, and he admitted so. But it also won him some fights, and he probably learned a lot, you know. So, you know, good for him. I don't think that was a bad time in his life. We'll see how it goes. But these heavyweights, anything goes with the heavyweights. All right, goes. Let's talk about Bellator coming up. Bellator 257 they're on now. You got two titles, or you got a title fight and two Grand Prix quarterfinals. So Nemkov defends against Davis in one of the quarterfinals, which also happens to be a title defense for Nemkov. They fought before. It was a split decision win for Nemkov, I think it was 2018. Since then, Davis has rattled off three wins. And with Davis being a former champion and a long-time top five guy in the light heavyweight division, be it in the UFC or Bellator, I think it was deserving for him to get this shot at Nemkov. So he gets the first crack at him. The winner advances in the Grand Prix towards that other prize, which is the belt and the $1 million prize. But it is a title fight, folks. And then the other side is Corey Anderson versus, we're calling him D-Yags. His real name is, here it goes, Dovizian Yagshimuradov. I guess that's not so bad. He's 18-5 overall, debuting in Bellator tonight. That's your co-main event. And we also have Vita Arteaga versus Desiree Yanez and Paul Daly versus Sabah Homasi. Julia Budd is also on the undercard. Carl Albrechtsen. Victor Nemkov, Pedro Carvalho, JJ Wilson. So they got a few names on the undercard as well. You can watch the prelims tomorrow night, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Junkie, MMA Junkie. And your main card will be shown on Showtime, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. And I'll say it like this. If you have DirecTV, you can watch it live at 6 p.m. on Showtime. But if you have cable, you may have to watch it at 9 p.m. Pacific on a delay. I know that on DirecTV, there's an East Coast, West Coast, so you have plenty of options there, but I think sometimes cable handcuffed us a little bit. But, you know, You can stay away for 3 hours, right, and watch them live on Showtime. And then the following day, well, why don't you give your thoughts on that card first, and then we'll finish up with some UFC on ESPN 22 talk.
I think it's Phil Davis's biggest fight. He's got to deliver here. Because, I mean, obviously he needs the win, but the Phil Davis brand, I think, needs to be re-energized. When you hear him talk, he sounds exactly the way he used to speak. He's very confident. I've never heard of him not being a hard worker, but he needs this win to still be somebody that's relevant in mixed martial arts in his division. And for Bellator, I think, to be able to say, hey, this is why we signed this guy. Yeah. I think it's a huge, important fight for him. He's got to get that win, but it's a tough matchup. I don't know if it's going to go his way. I don't think I can take him gun to the head, but if he can pull it off, the best Phil Davis can give anyone problems, anyone. But sometimes that guy just doesn't show up, and I'm hoping that on this high of a stage, he could put it all together for that.
He has these long spells where he won't do anything. Shoot, box, kick. And I think that's what hurts him the most. And so you're right. When you categorize it as showing up, we know he's there. And we know he does inflict some damage. But it's just not enough to win those rounds that wind up going against him 10-9, where he could have won 10-9. Because he's got the skills. It's just you got to be the one that puts up, I always say, feed the judges the data that they need. And a lot of times it's just maybe being more active. If neither one of you landed inflicted damage or anything impactful in that regard, it's usually the person that's just a little bit more active. So that seems to me how judges interpret these rounds nowadays. A strong finish is always good as well. I think that's always held up the test of time. So, you know, just leave it all out there. Empty the gas tank. Now, the winner of this fight will be facing – sorry, the winner of Davis versus Nemkov will face the winner of Anthony Johnson versus Yoel Romero. And then last week's winner, Ryan Bader, who defeated Lyoto Machida, he gets the winner of Corey Anderson versus Diaz. So I think one could argue that the Romero, AJ, Phil Davis, Nemkov side, which is probably the tougher side than the other side, but not by much, but it's just I think nobody really knows as much about Diaz. So the Anderson-Diaz winner will face Bader. I don't know if Bader will be there. And Nemkov-Davis winner will face AJ versus Romero. We talked to Scott Coker last week, and he explained Romero and Anthony Johnson. He said, hey, we learned from the past. When you got a big matchup, you put it out there. You don't just hope that they meet up in the finals. Of course, we were quick to point out, well, it's kind of what you did with Pitbull and AJ, but it did pay off. So There you have it. That was 16 deep.
True.
In the UFC on Saturday night, the event starts on ESPN and ESPN Plus. 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 Pacific. Some of the big names there, I guess, would be Jessica Penne returning after many years. Gerald Meerschaert, he's on that card. Anthony Berchak, good friend of the show. A bunch of other young fighters. Tracy Cortez is being talked about a lot as well. Then we move over to the main card, ESPN and ESPN Plus. 10 p.m. Eastern, Alexander Munoz versus Luis Pena is your first fight. Then you get to Abdul Razak Al-Hassan versus Jacob Malkoon, Chase Sherman versus Andre Arlovsky, Jakar Close versus Jeremy Stevens in the co-main event, Robert Whittaker versus Kelvin Gastelum in the main event. What are your thoughts there, Goose?
That the main event is where all my interest is. Robert Whittaker, though, man, I think that's a guy that just doesn't get as much credit as he deserves. Kelvin Gastelum is a very, very tough fighter, a very, very tough out. But I think he may have peaked just as far as like what he can give you. I don't know that there's any more surprises left in Kelvin Gastelum's tank. So I think this is Robert Whittaker's fight. And if he wins the fight, so long as it's not the world's most boring fight, I don't see how he's not next for the champion for Israel Adesanya. So there's a lot riding on this fight for him. Kelvin Gastelum, yeah, he's probably at his most dangerous when he's in this situation where he's maybe being overlooked a little bit. That's when he gives people problems. So I'm not counting him out completely, but I think this is Robert Whittaker's fight, and I think he knows that. I think the best Robert Whittaker is going to show up. And when you look at the three skins that he's going to have, it's going to be hard for Marvin Vettori to really make an argument towards him for that. So I think the main event is really where everything's at, and that's got most of my interest.
Right, because the only thing Marvin Vettori can say is, I have a longer win streak than you do. But Whitaker has the better overall middleweight record. He's been a champion. They both have lost to Israel Adesanya. Vettori can say, hey, one judge thought I beat him. Whitaker can't say that. But usually a champion who wins a couple fights gets another shot at the title, especially when you've had an impressive run like Robert Whitaker, who's beaten Jacare, Romero twice, you know, good list that he has, Brunson. You know, and now coming back with Till and Cannonier, that's tremendous. And to be able to beat Gastelum as well, that might be tough for the UFC to get away from. But yeah, it would have to be a really, really boring fight and a chirpy Vettori on social media, and then maybe Vettori can do it. Now, had Vettori finished his last fight, now you have a different story. I feel like those finishes carry a lot more momentum. He would have put a lot more pressure on Whitaker, and maybe he could have done something. I bet you there might be a little button to push on Izzy on the fact that he didn't finish him, that it was a split decision, that it was years ago. You know what I mean? And Israel seems to be one of those champions that has a say in who he fights next. You know, like the UFC has the strongest say usually. They're the ones that are moving pieces on the chessboard. But a lot of times it seems like they'll put their arm around the champ and go, what do you want to do, champ? Kind of like with Usman. You know, Usman fighting Masvidal, a guy who he had beaten before, and Masvidal hadn't gotten a win since then, but yet the UFC knew, hey, that's a big, big fight because Masvidal is a very successful prize fighter in terms of he brings in the dough. And there's an angle there where Masvidal's saying, I only had 6 days to prepare. And I think that sticks in Usman's craw. Usman now has 3 title defenses, an impressive record, represents himself well. So the UFC says, what do you want to do, champ? Let's see if we can work together. I think they do a little bit of that with Israel Adesanya as well. So we'll see. You know, we'll see how this turns out. And we only have a few more days to wait until we know the result. If that doesn't happen, then maybe Vettori and Brunson fight for the number one contender fight. And the first thing I would do if I was Vettori and I didn't get the fight, I'd say, put me on the same card as Israel Adesanya versus Robert Whitaker. That way, if Whitaker can't go, I step in. What sucks is if Israel can't go, do you step in for Whitaker? I suppose you could, but I've never really liked that option too much because you're not fighting for the title. You might as well just stick with your original fighter. I mean, I guess you get promoted to main event. I don't know. Depends. Every circumstance is different. So, folks, remember to check out the schedule tab on MMA Junkie, and it'll tell you everything that's happening. Not just this weekend, but in the weekends that are coming up. It lays it out there with your most current lineup, the channel you can watch the fights on, the start times, all that good information right there at the top, right next to results and rankings and news and everything that's up there on Junkie. In fact, let me read it to you. From left to right, it goes news, schedule, results, rankings, video, radio, that's us, and more. And all of our social media. Click in. Facebook's over 800,000 followers. Twitter's over, I want to say, like 300,000. YouTube's over 200,000. Instagram went to 1 million. Shout out to Mike Bond and the team for getting to the milli mark on that one. And always keep it locked on MMA Junkie. Every 20, 30 minutes, we got a new story that goes up. We got a team in Atlanta, Georgia for Triller. We got a team in Bellator, in Connecticut, for Bellator, I should say. And then, of course, the Vegas team holding it down for the UFC. We weren't able to get anyone to one in Singapore. I mean, that might be a bit too far, but still, we got you covered. And we also have a very, very cool app that's available for free, that's available on all smartphones and tablets. For Goz and I, we are going to host a UFC 261 watch-along on April 24th, so 1 week from this Saturday for Usman versus Masvidal, Nama Yunus challenging Zhang Weili, Valentina Shevchenko defending against Jessica Andrade. Join us for that. And As always, Mondays and Thursdays here on Sportscaster for our live MMA Junkie radio show. All right, folks, we are out of here. And keep it locked. Enjoy the fights all weekend and keep it locked on MMA Junkie. And we'll talk to you on Monday. Go out there and be a champion.